Good evening. This is Bill Blatchford. Welcome to our webinar. Mark, are you there?
I am here, yes. Hi, Bill.
Very good. Well, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to our webinar tonight. This is Dr. Mark Beckstead, a periodontist in Palo Alto, California, who's been a Blatchford client for almost 2 years. Mark has very graciously volunteered to share some of the things he's learned from us and some of the things he has put in place. The fact that Mark has, when he joined our program, and you can read about this if you read our new book, The Blatchford Blueprints, which is now out. We released it at the AACD meeting in Honolulu. When he joined the program, his main goal was to, he actually wanted his team members to earn six figures a year. Now, you can imagine what that does for a team. He has the most outstanding team that I've seen in a long time. People are absolutely committed to what he's committed to. Today, talking with a doctor who was going through problems, he noticed this particular doctor has three hygienists, and one of them has had 12 sick days so far, or in the last 12 months, in other words, one a month. And the interesting thing is, nine of them have occurred on Mondays, and she waits until 7 o'clock Monday morning to call in, and then, of course, wants the schedule change to match. Well, you can imagine in an office like Dr. Beckstead's, that does not occur. I want to make a couple announcements here before we go any further. For those of you doctors listening in on this, we do a ski trip to Park City, Utah each year. The dates for this year are February 26th, which is a Friday, March 6th, a Saturday, and so we'll get a full week of skiing in. It's mostly skiing, a little bit of seminar. This is Dr. Beckstead, who you're speaking tonight. Mark, why don't you talk a little bit about your Blatchford journey, a little thumbnail sketch of your practice, why you called us, what you expected to get out of the program, some of the things that have occurred. So rather than me talk much, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bill. Thanks for the opportunity to speak tonight. I appreciate it. I started with Blatchford. I think the words I used were to take what I thought was a successful practice at the time and raise the level higher to ultra-successful. And, you know, it's a journey, and we're still trying to be ultra-successful, but we've certainly made some ground towards that. And so I remember meeting Carolyn, not for the first time, but I did see her at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, and you had just printed the Playing Your A-Game book. And, you know, she asked me some questions like, are you happy where your practice is now? And I'm like, and I remember thinking and saying, well, yes and no. Yes, I'm happy about what we've accomplished, but I think we can do even better. And so I read the A-Game book, and even though most of the participants to the A-Game book are general dentists, pretty much focused on cosmetics, I found things that are just common to what I do as a periodontist with regards to concepts of running a highly efficient and profitable practice. So that got me charged up, and I was interested in pursuing it further with coaching. And it helped me also in that my next-door neighbor, until recently, I recently moved, but my next-door neighbor for many years was Rich Jensen and Fritz Meyer, who have been Blatchford clients in the past. So I was familiar with Blatchford. So anyway, with regards to the journey, interestingly enough, we showed up to the first Dynamo, which is, you know, the first team meeting with the Blatchford program, and we showed up with seven staff members, and it was a big deal getting everybody there. And then as we looked around and we heard people introduce themselves, my staff started looking at each other and saying, you know, we're the biggest team here by far. And we were taking up a whole table, and the other tables had two or three offices at them. So it became kind of evident that, number one, we had a big team, and then when we got down to, in the Dynamo, when we got down to writing down our goals, what we would like, and when everybody wrote down, you know, what's your dream salary, I just asked everybody, did anybody write down anything less than six figures? And everybody said, no. You know, everybody was thinking, you know, that six figures or better, somewhere in the six-figure range was their dream salary. And so basically from that point forward, we say, okay, well, let's see what we can do to, you know, ensure that we reach those goals. And so that's always been one of our, as a team, one of our focuses is to see that everybody in the office makes six figures. So if we were to go to a meeting today, I would come with my wife, who now works in the practice, one front office person in addition to my wife. She does the financials, but one full-time front office person, one assistant, and two hygienists. So a total team of four as opposed to seven. And our productivity hasn't changed. So, you know, taking that in consideration, our profitability has risen, and the amount that the staff has earned individually has grown and has approximated that six-figure mark. So we we went through the Blatchford program. I think some of the key things that have helped us feel success along the way is, number one, the bonus program. Number two would be block booking. Number three would be leadership and a goal-oriented practice. So it, as typical with a larger staff, as I was able to define my goals and where I wanted to go, there was some of the staff that latched on and said, yeah, that's where I want to go too. And there were others that kind of said, yeah, that makes sense, I can see it, but they didn't really feel it. And those people aren't with us anymore. And it just was sort of a natural evolution. And that transition from seven staff to now three plus my wife, four plus my wife, I'm sorry, that has happened naturally over the course of about 18 months.
Now, you even had a couple that said they couldn't even see it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, right off. And, you know, we noticed that, like, when we moved, you know, who's there, you know, who shows up, you know, ready to pack boxes and make this thing happen, and who's just sort of, you know, watching it happen. And so it just becomes evident who's on board and who isn't.
Now, Mark, a lot of people question, how can you run a practice of this size with just one person at the front desk?
So it is a challenge, and so when it came time to let one of the people go, I brought in Tina, who's our front office person, and I said, Tina, here's the situation, and I really want to counsel with you as to what you think. Your input's really important. I see these as our options, but you know, one option is you can run it yourself. You can run it with a part-time assistant, or we could bring on just the right person to share the front office duties with you. And she said, let me do it myself. You know, let me give it a try.
Now, of course, with another incentive here for doctors listening in, and we have a finite percentage of gross that we're going to use for staff salaries and compensation. So we divide by one or we divide by two.
Exactly. And then so what we ended up with was she does handle the front. The only thing she does not handle directly is the posting of charges and submission of insurance, which my wife, who has an accounting background, handles.
And you have two hygiene schedules and your schedule. Now, you do a lot of IV sedation. We'll come to that in a few minutes. But that's actually a lot of patients. So it took some systems in place so that one administrator could do this.
Definitely.
You mentioned block booking. How has that worked? I mean, what you do is very similar to a general dentist as far as longer appointments in the morning. But as a periodontist, how did you make block booking work?
So, you know, the skeleton, the core of our productivity are our surgical procedures, and they tend to be either 1 hour single-site surgeries or two-hour larger cases. And, you know, a lot of our work, it's a mix of, you know, implant work, gingival augmentation work, and treating periodontal disease, sort of those three, in that order, in terms of kind of what takes most of our time. And so with block booking, we try and be pretty disciplined with it, and we have mapped out what we think our ideal day is. And so an ideal day, like in the morning, we start at 7, and we take lunch at noon. So there's 5 hours there, and what we would want is a big procedure, a 2 to 3 hour procedure, and two small procedures in the morning. Sometimes we'll have a new patient right first thing, because there's some patients that want to come in before work.
So while you follow block booking, there is some flexibility available.
There is some flexibility.
Sure.
And then in the afternoon would be more geared towards new patient exams, post-op visits, consults, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we still like to get in at least 1 hour of procedure time in the afternoon, because it breaks it up.
Tell me a little bit about what percentage of your treatment is based around implant surgery, or percentage of income, maybe would be the way to say it.
So if you were to include with implant work extractions and augmentation of the extraction site, or ridge augmentation in preparation, or sinus bone augmentation in preparation to implant, it's over 50%. And it's between 50% and 60%, sort of depending on the flow.
And so that we could consider basically a treatment that's really discretionary, and people can have implants or not have implants. They can have their teeth replaced with other types of replacements. So you've really had to work some on case presentation skills as well, and so has the rest of your staff, because it's not the typical patient coming over for corrective periodontal surgery.
Right, and I think even more so now with the economy we're living in, that's really been our focus at our last several staff meetings, has been presentation skills, patient education, how things are handled on the phone, starting from the first contact through their initial exam and case presentation. That is key.
And you also do quite a few what I would call cosmetic procedures, almost plastic surgery procedures, and those are purely discretionary.
Yeah, definitely.
And easy to say no to something like that and live with. Nobody's going to die from black triangle disease. And so your case presentation skills have definitely helped, and also your staff is very good at that. Tell me a little bit about what some of the things your staff has done, your team, as I get these terms interchangeable, and I get criticized by my team for not calling them team members rather than staff, but what have they done to improve their case presentation skills?
So kind of starting with the initial phone call, there's sort of a series of questions that Tina or whoever answers the phone is they're asking questions of the patient to find out kind of where the patient's at, and helping the patient to find out if our practice is a fit for them. Many, our practice might differ a little bit from general practice, because many of our referral doctors have prepared the patient already to come here for a specific thing. So those cases are pretty easy. Others who are kind of shopping around with regards to services require more questions and more front-end discussion on their initial call. But with regards to how the staff gets involved, Tina, who's our front office person, is the first contact. She's outgoing, she's bubbly, she's pleasant, she's got, tremendous voice inflection. When you walk into the room, she's the person like somebody turned on a light bulb. She's the one that is warm, and it's like the person that walked in has a warm welcome, and there's energy there from the start, which is great. And Haide, who's my assistant, will come in and talk to the patient, small talk, and she's great at it and personable. And I think she's far better at it than I am, actually, in terms of helping the patient to relax and kind of, work the way around as to why the patient's there.
She continues those same questions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I kind of overhear this, and so I walk in, and by that time, my job's usually pretty easy. So I, introduce myself and talk to the patient about why they're there and their experience with their general dentist and what their thoughts are about what's been described to them, and take a look at things, and we use some audiovisual things in our new office. We've got a monitor that the patient can see, so we use Consult Pro as a way of educating patients if there's any questions in their minds with regards to what I'm describing to them. We've got some things to help them understand what we're talking about.
Now, you work with our questions, and your team was at the Dynamo, and I remember, questions about how they were going to use this in a perio practice. I do know one of your referral sources, and he really likes to send people to you because he feels the patients are while they start, they're basically been talked to about a complete treatment plan, but when they come back from your office, it is solidified, whereas we send to so many specialists, and the specialists don't continue that type of a conversation. So tell us a little bit how you do that.
Well,
what has your team done this year besides being at the Dynamo? I mean, I know you've worked on case presentations. I also know that during the year, one of your concerns was, or one of your wishes was to not be a Delta provider, and in California, that's a pretty big deal. And we gave you some exercises to do, and you're not a Delta provider.
We're not a Delta provider. That's unusual in our area for a perionist to not be a Delta provider. What we did
is unusual for any specialist in your area not to be a Delta provider.
That's true. That's true. It is unusual, and we may lose some patients through that. There are some patients that are insurance-driven, and when they find out we're not, a Delta-preferred provider, they move on. But we have definitely worked, and we've practiced and drilled as recently as our last staff meeting with regards to, how do you handle the verbal skills with that? Because the reality is, whether I'm a Delta provider or not a Delta provider, the scope of treatment that we're talking about for most of our patients, the amount of coverage that they get and the amount of benefit they receive from their insurance, it's about the same whether I'm a provider or not a provider. They reach their maximum very quickly, and many of the things, particularly with implant work that I do, are not covered at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we've drilled the questions, we've done role playing, and the BMW 4x4, 4 hours of staff training every 4 weeks is something we have that we do, and we have one tomorrow afternoon.
One of the things that Mark found when we first started talking, just after he had done the summit with us — the summit is what new clients do when they first join our program, and this was one of his wishes — we had him do an exercise that we call the 80-20 spreadsheet, and what he found out was that while he had been afraid to drop Delta for years — and I'm not a pro or con on whether you should be a provider for Delta, but this is one of Mark's wishes — he was always afraid to do that because some of his referral sources were Delta providers, and yet when he did the exercise, he found out that his best referral sources were not Delta providers. We found out the amount of income that we were getting. So it's, for a specialist, it's a little bit different than a general dentist. A general dentist, we're evaluating patients, and in this case, we were evaluating referral sources. And so you not being able to be everything to everyone, was able to drop that. And then a second thing I think is critical here is that you mentioned that you and your team have role-played various scripts, and you continue to do that. I mean, you've been in the program almost 2 years now, and it really makes me feel good that you're still practicing these, which I think everyone should be doing, because we get the same questions, the same comments from patients day after day, and yet I find that probably 95% of all staff out there are simply winging it every single time that comes up. Then, of course, they have conversations with each other saying, gosh, I wish I would have remembered to say it this way, or I wish I'd have remembered this, or something like that. And the only way to overcome that is, first off, have the scripts and then practice them. And that requires the leadership of the doctor. Did you have any resistance from your team members at all on starting to, well, to change the way they practice, the way they, I mean, you have some very experienced people there. Did you have any resistance on the change?
We did from some
the other four.
I remember one staff member that I said, you know, as we you know, position our practice where we want it, you know, your job description that of what it used to be really isn't going to exist anymore. You know, we had a kind of a financial coordinator that did nothing but, on a full-time basis, did kind of what my wife does on a part-time basis now. And, I was saying, your job really isn't going to exist, and this is where I'd like you to emphasize your energies. We're going to shift gears and change direction. And although there was some effort put on that and some training and that type of thing, it never really worked. And so we had to make a change there.
Yeah. Didn't work because she just wasn't receptive.
Yeah, and I don't know if she understood the vision of making the change. You know,
yeah.
Letting go of old, embracing new, that was a tough transition.
And now you do a lot of IV sedation. You work with, and you're doing, we're not going to talk about your numbers tonight, you're doing a lot of treatment. You do one assistant. How have you made that work?
That's the thing that I didn't think was going to work, because I've practiced with two assistants working with me hands-on my whole career. And the one assistant that I have is so dedicated. But the interesting thing is the team chips in. But when people look at the practice and come in and watch what happens and see how it works, the biggest surprise is that our hygienists are 100% part of our team, just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They are not prima donnas. They are willing to set up a tray, seat a post-op patient, do the post-operative visit. They're willing to stand there with me and enter probing depths as I read them off with a new patient. They have the same verbal skills that the rest of the team has because they've been to all these trainings with us. So I don't have any part-time hygienists. I don't have hygienists that just come to my office once a week and they're in somebody else's office the rest of the time. They're all full-time in my office, you know, both of them. And so they're part of our team, and they are members of that team just like any of the other staff are. So that, I think we broke the mold on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least in our area, historically, hygienists have been prima donnas. And they hold themselves to a little bit of a different level than the rest of the team does. And so our hygienists are able to take on assignments above and beyond the duties of cleaning teeth. They're able to answer the phone. They're able to print up, like, for instance, if they're helping me with a new patient exam, they are able to generate the written treatment plan and cost analysis from the computer just like any of the others.
So they actually know the fees?
They know the fees. They know how to work the computer system to print out those things for new patients to evaluate, and they're able to have the full discussion with the patient just like my one assistant does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it works, because somebody is available to help me. We make sure that somebody's available to help me. So I might finish a surgery and go into a post-op or a new patient, and somebody else on the team is going to help me with that because my assistant's cleaning up from the surgery.
So in other words, we've eliminated job description, so to say.
Right.
I mean, they're still hygienists, and obviously your dental assistant can't do what a licensed hygienist can do, and your office administrator can't do what, you know, statutes prohibit, but other than that, everything is shared by everyone.
Right, and I have to say that from my perspective as practice leader, that's been the most rewarding thing. That's the most rewarding change, and is getting it to the point where everybody on the team is an equal participant.
Uh-huh. Now, the hygienists, of course, still make more. They're equal, but they make a little more money, but their base pay is higher. But the bonus system, the way we teach, everybody gets an equal share of the bonus system. So the difference in pay between the four people is probably not as great as it was at one time.
It's not. And when I say my hygienists are full-time, they're both 3 days a week. And so they get three-fourths of the bonus. And the other team members get a full four-fourths.
Mark, do you work, how many days a week are you working?
4 days.
4 days. And how much vacation time are you taking?
We take 8 weeks per year, and that's for the entire team.
The whole team gets 8 weeks, and that's paid vacation for all of them.
Right.
And your overhead is still within the guidelines of right around 50% overhead.
Yeah, I think we're at around 55, but it's because our rent's high. As you know, we purchased a building and
they bought a beautiful new building, and or built a new building, and they're in Palo Alto, California, which is some of the highest rent in the country, and they're still at that 55%. So the staff is in that 20% range, and that's working really well. And in most of the country, especially with multiple hygienists, I see perio offices up in that 30% range, just very similar to what general dentists are. And you're down there in that 20% range, so that's wonderful. All right, what else? We've covered the staff. Tell us a bit about your leadership. What have you learned in the last year and a half about leadership that you've actually put in place, and how do you perform differently today than you say you were 2 years ago? Because you're doing the same production with half the team. What do you do differently?
I think I'm more comfortable in expressing how I would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to be a little cautious with couching it just right, making sure I wasn't going to offend anyone. And at this point, you know, our staff know me really well, and they pretty much know what the way I'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is just to keep it on track.
Yeah.
You know, we've established what the principles are, and now it's just holding everyone, including myself, accountable for doing it. And sometimes I'll have to point out, and sometimes other team members will point out that we're not doing it quite right in a certain area, or that we could do it better.
So it really doesn't take any more management. Probably takes less management than what you used to do.
Yeah, the staff was saying. My assistant was saying just recently. She goes, you know, we don't have reviews as much as we used to have. You know, and I used to have quite a schedule for lunchtime reviews. We'd review the front office as a group, and then we'd review them individually as employees. And I still think for employment law purposes, it's important to have some reviews. But we just don't need it as mm-hmm. much as we used to. We just don't do that as much.
Well, I've always said, and you'll hear me say from time to time, that, and this is being very obvious out there in the corporate world right now, that the with the corporations that are in financial difficulty, I've said for years, and I've really echoed Tom Peters on this, and I think I heard it first from him, and he said the American corporation is under-led and over-managed. And I've said the same thing is true with dental offices, is most dentists don't lead very effectively, but then they micromanage. And I think, and I would not ever have accused Mark of micromanaging his practice, but that's what I see in so many practices. And that's how we get out of this management of the details, is you become a better leader and you make the vision much more clear. And then, of course, as Mark has demonstrated, you select people that share that vision with you. And those people don't require as much management. They don't have the issues that we're constantly reviewing and constantly trying to hold them accountable and pick up that standard. They're way ahead of us most of the time, so that makes a big difference. I do want to have questions from the audience, and so what you'll have to do is unmute your phone. You can unmute your phone at this time and ask Mark some questions. The other thing is that if you would like to, I can go back to the other screen, and you can type your questions in, and I will read them if that would work for you as well, so you can do it either way. you know, I did a little thing on this and what is the cost of this program, and I did some math on this. And Mark, what I would say is that this program probably costs about the same as a 17 an hour dental assistant if a doctor finances and pays for it. What would you say the return has been? And because your gross stayed roughly the same, but your net has gone up, and again, you can share numbers if you want. You don't have to, or you can share what your net has gone up or not. What would you say the cost has been as it relates to the return, and then maybe not just monetarily?
So I don't remember exactly what the cost was, but...
Well, that says a lot for it right there. I mean, you paid $47,000. You don't remember the cost. That means that it wasn't too significant, I guess.
Right. But, so $47,000, and, you know, if we did nothing, like using the example you have on the screen here, if we did nothing else but when we had 7 full-time staff members, replaced one of those staff members and became more efficient at a team, and we did nothing else, we didn't do anything with our productivity or anything with our accounts receivable or didn't do anything with regards to how we block booked, the program would have paid for itself in a year, right? Because let's say an assistant would make, you know, $47,000 a year. All of mine were making that much. So I think what you have on the screen is accurate, and I think it only applies to 1 year.
Well, that's correct.
And yet, you know, from my standpoint, you know, right off, I doubled the amount of time that I take off. You know, we used to take, you know, 3 weeks off, 4 weeks off, especially for the staff. I mean, the staff used to, you know, they work a year and get a week off paid, and then after 2 years they get 2 weeks, and it maxed out at 3 weeks, and that's after they'd been there a long time. And now they all have 8 weeks of paid time off.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
now that's got to raise morale.
That raises morale. That and the bonus system are huge morale boosters. Huge.
So you're going to come on our bicycle trip across Washington next week?
Hey, well, that sounds good. I'm scheduled to bicycle, do the Davis Double Century on Saturday.
You'd be halfway across Washington before we get started then. We're going to ride from Spokane to the coast leaving next Friday. And Mark does a lot of bicycling. As a matter of fact, he rides his bicycle to work every day. And that was one of the criteria in finding a place for his new office, was where he could cycle. So you have 8 weeks off. The staff gets 8 weeks off. How do your referring doctors, do they know you're taking 8 weeks off, and how do they respond to that?
I'm not sure they all know that
does it matter?
I don't think it matters. I mean, you know, occasionally, if there's something they need to talk to me about, they have my cell phone, and that's always available. And, you know, the concern with the specialist is, hey, well, you're not there, and a patient needs to be seen. They're going to go somewhere else. And, yeah, maybe that's true. I don't know. It hasn't really, I don't think that's been a big factor for us. And so I think it's fine with our referrals. They know how I operate, and, Many of our top referrals also, you know, value their time off, and so they understand.
And the thing is that dental problems, at least in a perio practice or a general practice, yes, we have some emergencies, but it's easy to find somebody to handle the acute emergencies. And the other things, we're only talking a week or two at a time, so that's good. So your productivity per hour then, even though your total productivity has remained roughly the same, your productivity per hour has definitely increased.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely, we've become more efficient.
And what you would say is, of the $47,000, with the three people that you reduced the staff size, you basically doubled your return that first year on the, well, you tripled it, basically, on the investment you originally made.
Yes.
And that's continued. Now you're into your second year, of course. The second year, you're in a connection program, and the cost for that is only $400 a month, and so that return has really started to grow there.
Yeah, and I think I've done a year on that, so I think I got to be approaching my third year.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think Mark is also in our latest book of the Blueprint. So, all right, do we have questions? Maybe the people on the call tonight, you can type your questions in. If you go down to that little chat box where it just says right there, and then just say send to, and you can send them to all participants, or you can click on that box and pick out anybody on here. You can send it. My name is there, I believe. Well, naturally, it's not. You have to send it to Mark, but we can see the questions, or you can send it to all participants, either way you want to do it, or you can just unmute your phone and ask Mark some questions or ask me some questions. You'll have to unmute to do that. Mark, let's talk a little bit about, from the standpoint of just your well-being as far as your feeling when you leave the office now compared to before. Operating with a smaller team is certainly easier. How does that affect you?
You know, it's particularly affected me with the economy change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a smaller staff and being more efficient, I feel more nimble and more able to readily change our focus or emphasis.
I see.
So one thing that we've added, you know, since I joined the program to our practice, actually there's been several things, but you know, some of the things that we've changed have to do with the way that we provide treatment to patients, and you know, we've gotten involved with laser periodontal therapy significantly. You know, that's a major tool for us now in treating periodontal disease. And we've changed the way we do connective tissue grafts, not harvesting from the palate, but rather using, you know, an allograft for that procedure. And so I would say a combination of things here. Reducing our overhead takes the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
And getting continuing education to where we offer not necessarily brand new services, but alternatives to the way of doing treatment, you know, has helped us a lot. You know, it keeps us excited about what we're doing. And so I'd say the combination of those two things, really good continuing education and lowering the overhead, making us more efficient, I think we can deal better with the pressures that are on us with regards to the economy and a lot of the negative stuff that's out there.
Well, I think one of the things, and I've said this for a long time, is that it's relatively easy to be successful in a boom time. Businesses with, and I've pointed this out, and I didn't prepare slides on this tonight, but I have some slides that if you're doing $1 million in a general practice, or especially practice, and you're at 75% overhead, your net income is $250. Not so good. But if you have a 10% drop in your production down to $900,000, your net income drops by 40% or down to $150,000, and that's not acceptable. And most families have a real hard time living on $100,000 less than they've been earning. Now, I've been teaching doctors for years to keep their overhead down in that magic 50-55% range. So if you're doing $1 million at 50%, you're taking home $500,000. A 10% drop in gross income is only $100,000, and you're still making $400,000. And that word that Mark uses, nimble, is critical. And this recession, just like every recession that we've seen, and we seem to see one about every 7 or 8 years, I believe that this time the recession's a little deeper than we've seen, some of them, although the one back in 81 was just as deep as this and actually deeper. You know, we had an 18% unemployment rate in many states, and I think it was like 12% nationwide. Right now, I saw this morning, it's 8.7 nationwide. So we have a long ways to go to hit the depth we hit in 81. But the point is that this time the media was much more efficient at broadcasting doom and gloom, and people are feeling it more. And now we have the press, which really bothers me, is they're talking about the new frugality, and the reporters, and whether it be media, print media or television, are telling people how to save money and how to eat at home and not go out to eat and how to travel close to home for vacations. And the next thing you're going to be hearing is telling people to postpone dental care. And this is where I think that, number one, having your overhead and having your practice, I'll use your term, more nimble, and then secondly, being more proactive in your ability to demonstrate the value of treatment to patients. I mean, we can sit back and just pretend that what we've done in the past will continue to work. But as people become more conservative with their spending, dental work can be put off, especially elective procedures. Now, if you have an acute toothache, you can't put that off. But beyond the acute pain, an acute infection, almost everything else can wait. And so we definitely have to get better at our business side, and we also have to get better at our communication skills so as we can demonstrate the value of treatment to patients. And I think we can be proactive about this, or we can procrastinate and hope the problem will go away. Mark, you've seen, you've worked with a number of our general dental practices as well as their referring specialists. What are some of the things that you've seen in their practices that that you see that have worked, that they've learned from us?
Well, there's two things. For the most part,
you work
part,
right next door to one. You actually shared a back hallway with one.
Yeah, and that, what a great relationship that's been. But I'd say two things. First of all, I'd say the Blatchford clients that I've worked with look at the big picture. In other words, they're looking at comprehensively treatment planning and presenting cases to patients as opposed to limited treatment or one-tooth dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that that comes back to me as a positive is when there's a big picture person behind the treatment plan, it usually involves implants or foundation work, which is periodontal care, and so I'm involved in the case. So I think that's probably the biggest benefit that I see. That also goes is very consistent with the concepts that we promote in our study club, which we run a component of the Seattle Study Club, and ours is the local chapter, which is the Palo Alto Study Club. And so that's a very good fit. The other thing that that Blatchford offices tend to do, from my experience, is they tend to be sort of super generalist. They do a lot of different types of treatments, or they're looking for avenues that they can expand their practice or move their practice to keep it fresh and to offer more services to patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say those are the two things that I've noticed the most.
And the thing that I see about it, as the dentist becomes a super generalist, they learn more, they have more services they do themselves, they also see more because they're educated in those areas, and they tend to also refer more because they see more.
Yeah.
Here's a question that comes up often, I think, with people, and tonight I want you to learn from Mark, and also this is an opportunity for some of you to consider joining our program. We are having a very good year as far as people enrolling. This first quarter has been really great. But I hear people all the time asking, I need to ask my spouse or my accountant or my team members, and one of the responses that I have to that is that how long have your spouses, team members, accountants known that you want to raise your income and have more time off, and what have they done about that so far? I think that what Mark has pointed out here tonight, that really what we're talking about here is about the salary of one dental assistant. And I guess the question is, do you ask your spouse or your accountant if we should hire another dental assistant? I think that's the question. It's really a leadership issue. Mark, when you decided to do this program, I think I was working with one other periodontist at the time. Now I'm working with, I think, five periodontists. I'm working with several prosthodontists. What were your considerations? I mean, what you wanted to make this happen. You were pretty clear what you wanted to have happen. What thought processes or considerations did you have that you had to overcome yourself to join the program?
Well, specific to my situation is, does this program fit for a periodontist? So,
mm-hmm.
That was quite specific to my own situation. And you're right, at the time, I may have been the first. I don't remember exactly who had been involved with your program. So I felt like I was kind of extrapolating. I was going to need to extrapolate the concepts from what would be in a general practice to mine. But the reality is most of the things that I've benefited from are general principles that would apply to any practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that really hasn't been a factor. What I was interested in, as I told Carolyn initially, was there were some things I'd like a tighter team than what I had with regards to the staff that we had and the direction we were going. And I felt a lot of support from my wife, because when I presented, you know, the things that I wanted to get out of the Blatchford program, it had to do with lifestyle, it had to do with efficiency, having more time off, being less stressed, you know, those types of things, which she's all for. So that wasn't difficult at all. So I think the last people that I would ask if they would support it or not would be the staff, because I think it's the leader's decision to get involved in something like this, and the staff will either embrace it or not. And I wouldn't, as the leader, go to them to find out if it's going to work or not.
Yeah, I mean, they're, as a matter of fact, I very seldom do I see a team member or a group of people that are interested in changing what they're doing. They're generally fairly comfortable doing exactly what they've always done, and any word of change tends to strike panic into the troops often. And so we've had a few doctors that joined the program because their staff actually said, unless you do, I'm going to leave. They've worked in another office I've worked in, but generally I would say the team is not the one to ask. I guess the question here that I'd like to ask everybody on the call is, will 2009 be a banner year for you? And, you know, what are you doing about it? And what did you learn here tonight from what Mark has talked about that might help you have a banner year? And if there's something that we can do as Blatchford Solutions to help you do that, we would like to have a conversation with one of our team specialists and to see if it would be a fit for you. We're not a fit for everybody, and we're quick to point that out. As recently as last week, I made a decision on one doctor who was interested in joining the program that it just really wasn't the right program at the right time. And I'm very interested in getting the right people at the right time. All right, we've given you some time for some questions. Do any of you have any questions for Mark that you'd like to ask? I mean, I've been asking all the questions. I see a couple questions here. Mark, when you say you take 8 weeks off, how many days of work does that mean? Are your education days included in this number, or are they above the number?
Both. Most of my education days are included in that number. We take a week off for the Seattle Study Club and Symposium. I take several days off for the AAP meeting. And that would be included in those 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as you know, going to a meeting can be refreshing in and of itself. It's different than strictly vacation time, but it is refreshing and motivating.
And so, about how many days then are you working?
Per year?
I get 176, roughly 170. Is that about
I think
right?
171 is what we have. There's a few other things. There's as we plotted out the entire year this year ahead of time, and I think it was 171.
About 770. Walter, you have a question. Do staff members take the same 8 weeks of vacation time during the year? If at the same time, who answers the phone? Good question.
Yeah. So we've tried that a couple ways. The answer is yes. The whole team takes time off. And we've tried it a couple different ways. In other words, we've rotated amongst the staff, using technology to where our office phone rings through to a staff member and they alternate. Like if we have a week off and I'm out of town at a meeting, let's say, we'll alternate it with regards to who's going to be in town and we'll answer the phone. And we'll answer it remotely. In other words, it could be patched through to a cell phone, and the staff member could be on their home computer scheduling appointments, et cetera. We've tried that. And the last week that we had off, we did it a little differently. We just picked days that people would be available. And so we lost a couple of days of coverage during the week, but the longest that a patient would go, for instance, if they called on Monday for a new patient exam, they would get a call back on Tuesday morning with a response as to, a live person answering their request.
Yeah, that's pretty much how we teach it, Walter. The team members, truly team members, and yes, they do, and most of our offices, general dental offices, are taking anywhere from, I think probably low of 6 weeks to a high of 12 weeks, and they take turns. And so the staff members literally get maybe 2 weeks less than what the doctor gets, but they're not in the office. Now, we have a couple offices who are in shopping center locations where they get a lot of walk-by traffic, and in those cases, we do have somebody man the office physically. In other cases, we do just like Mark said, we answer the phone, transfer the phones, use a home computer with GoToMyPC or some type of software, and they access the office software, and they can make appointments, answer the phone just as though they're in the office, and it works very well. Other questions? If some of you don't want to type in, you just speak up.
Hi, my name is David Pierce. You and I met recently.
Yes, I understand you're going to be doing our program soon.
I am, yeah. I'm excited
Welcome.
About that. Thank you. I had a question for Mark.
Go ahead.
Mark, had you worked with your spouse before, and if so, what led you to that decision to bring her on board, even if in a part-time capacity?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I was always fearful of bringing a staff on. When I started in practice, I had a partner, and we both sort of committed to each other that neither one of our staffs was going to, or our spouses was going to come on board, because there would be like a conflict of interest or something. But my partner retired, and I'm in solo practice, and I was concerned that, you know, we'd have problems with, you know, with work interfering with home life or vice versa. And I've been really, really pleasantly surprised that that has not been the case. And basically what happened is my wife, because she's great with numbers, understands things, would come in and kind of help my Tina, who's my full-time front office person, just with the numbers part. And then she found that she kind of liked talking it up with the patients. She enjoyed that. And she being in the front and me being in the back, there's enough division. It's not like, for some reason, it's just worked out great. The dynamic is fine. In fact, you know, we spend some of the best hours of our life at work. And it's kind of nice to see, you know, your spouse when you're awake and fresh and on your game. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I will point out to all the participants on the call that having your spouse work in the office is not something we put position on at all at Blatchford Solutions. If the spouse wants to be there and they think it's going to work, we encourage it. But if the spouse doesn't want to be there, we don't encourage it. And I would say it's about 50-50. We have offices that where we actually encourage the spouse to get out of the office, but it's always based on what the doctor wants. I mean, it really depends on them. And so we don't have a position. I don't have a model that says your spouse should be there or a model that says your spouse should not be there. We have many offices where the spouses work there. We have probably way more offices the spouse doesn't go there at all. So we don't have a position on that at all. But in this case, it works out very well. And here was, I believe your wife's a CPA by training, isn't she?
She is, yeah. And, you know, I don't tell her when to come and when not to come. You know, she knows what her duties are, and she budgets her time accordingly. So there's days that I don't see her in the office until 3 p.m., and she's here just in the late afternoon, you know, doing posting and getting insurance out. And so she feels some flexibility with it.
Right.
And so she doesn't feel like she's under my thumb.
And by not having a job in a CPA firm, she also is able to go on vacation with you when you choose.
There you go.
Well, Mark, I'd like to thank you for your participation tonight, and just let you know how much I have enjoyed working with you in the last couple of years. And hopefully you'll be an inspiration to some of these doctors listening in tonight that this can work well, and it even works in a specialty office. I think that's one of the, I see several specialists registered for the call tonight. And that's a question. I currently have 5 periodontists that I'm working with and several prosthodontists. And so what we've found is that the business principles, the leadership principles that we teach, and the lifestyle approach, and our approach to this is that you help the client design a lifestyle that is what they want, and then you help them design a practice which will support that lifestyle. My opinion is life is very short, and I do not want my clients to have the practice wag the doctor, so to speak. I want the doctor to choose a lifestyle that works and then design a practice that works. And dentistry is one of the areas that you can do this, and I think so many professionals don't understand this, that truly we can design our life the way we want. So for some of you doctors who are looking at our program, I want to thank several of my clients for being on the call tonight. I see several names here of people we're currently working with. And for those of you who are listening in that are thinking about doing our program, you'll be getting a call from one of our specialists. And please take that call, even if you want to tell them that the timing is not right for you or whatever it is you want to say. You're welcome to be on future calls. You'll be getting emails from us announcing those calls. So thank you very much, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Bill.